Welcome to the Market Moment. My name is Matt Walters here with Eli Freeman and Lee Mackey. Today we're covering meme stocks. They're making a comeback and a viral TEDx video comparing different generations' wealth, and then kind of coinciding with that, talking about Gen Zs versus millennials and where they're at today versus 10, 15 years ago and how they're doing. So let's jump into it. Well, before we get to that, remember you can join the growing Market Moment online community by hitting the subscribe button. Give us a like, and we appreciate all the comments. We're going to talk about some comments at the end of the video. That'll be a lot of fun. All the comments are always so highly encouraging. all right, let's start with some meme stocks. GameStop soared as much as 110% Monday. It was halted for volatility numerous times after Roaring Kitty, the person who's seen as the kickstart, no meowing, as the Kickstarter of the meme stock frenzy during the pandemic, posted online for the first time since 2021. He's back. I guess it's a he. Roaring Kitty was identified in 2021 as Keith Gill, so it is a he. Became a prominent figure on the Wall Street Bets subreddit and YouTube for his bullish stance on GameStop. The last time Roaring Kitty posted it on X was June 2021. A whole movie has been made about the fiasco, titled Dumb Money. So let's see, what's GameStop up today at pre-market? Well, the market's open now.
GME?
Yeah. What's going on? Oh, it's up just a little bit of a 63% this morning. So last couple days, it's obviously up big. It was trading at $17 a share, and now it's at 50.
You know, this...
A few days later. So what are y'all's thoughts?
You know, this kind of goes hand in hand with the podcast we did last week where we talked about, you know, the average everyday investor, you know, and we were talking about, oh my gosh, the platform.
Reddit?
No.
Robinhood?
Yeah, we were talking about Robinhood. Thank you. Our producer was ever so slightly whispering in our ear. we were talking about Robinhood, and was it, you know, did it have a place in today's marketplace? And you know, Robinhood hardly existed before the meme stocks, you know? And so GameStop and, you know, I took a picture this morning. I told you guys before we came on the air, GameStop, SunPower Corp was up 155% in pre-market trading. AMC Entertainment, the theater group, was up over 100%. And then everybody's favorite, BlackBerry, was up almost 30% in the pre-market trading. These are not institutional investors.
Buttons are back.
Where do you buy a BlackBerry device?
I don't even know if they...
A pawn shop?
On eBay. You know, these are not institutional players moving the market.
Yeah.
I mean, these are people...
People, you know, called Roaring Kitty.
Yeah, that are... fueling this. And then what happens is people who've shorted it have to cover, and then it just creates this massive frenzy that we're seeing again. I mean, what was it? Was it 2 years ago?
2021.
It was 2021.
So three years ago that we saw it.
Which, if we're going back to the stuff that happened in 2021, there's a lot more stuff that's going to go
high. Oh, we're a long ways from that.
NFTs, you know, SPACs.
We're a long ways from that. If we have five or six companies just go parabolic here, I mean, that's not the same as what it was back then.
Not even close.
But. No, and you know, one of the comments that's in our notes was that, you know, they interviewed some investment guy, some analyst that said that this time around it's probably more of a positive than a negative. You know, I don't know. I mean, I'm not following meme stocks, but it is a phenomenon. I mean, it's interesting that a tweet that really had no substance to it whatsoever just blew up these stocks.
That online community is large. I mean, there's a lot of people, right? And you get enough people just throwing a little bit of money at something, it can make it move.
I remember seeing,
especially when the volume is very low and it's a thinly traded stock.
Yeah. But I remember seeing a couple months ago Roaring Kitty came out and apologized to the general public for...
He was just kidding.
He was just kidding.
Kitty.
No, I said I did not say kitten. He was just kidding. Yeah, I think he's
back.
Yeah, he wants to make a quick $10 billion.
I love it.
I mean, the dude's probably got more money than the three of us will ever have combined because of what he's done.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think Roaring Kitty is acting on any insider information with any of these stocks. It's just, it's probably fun to him, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, he probably has a following of millions of...
It has to be fun.
Yeah, yeah. But that's when Robin Hood and some of these...
Well, what's Reddit? Online. What's Reddit doing?
I don't know, but we talked about volume. You know, that's... It doesn't take a lot of shares being traded to move one of these positions.
Reddit's up. I have it since May 10th. So May 10th through this morning, AMC's up 233%. GameStop, 184%. Reddit's up 14.74%.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, it's not bad for Reddit right after they became publicly traded to get all this publicity and PR again like they did previously now as a publicly traded company.
Now is maybe when you go in and short some of these stocks. You know, just because they're going to be
famous last words.
Exactly.
This is not financial advice.
No, it is not. No, it is not.
Yeah, it's fun to keep track of. We do not recommend that you go in and make serious investments around these names. But...
I'm not going to take a position in BlackBerry.
Yeah, yeah. It goes against everything that I am. But it is fun nonetheless. All right, so moving on.
Yeah.
Do you believe the U.S. is destroying young people's futures? What a title.
Goodness.
That's pretty strong. There's a trending TEDx talk on YouTube titled, How the U.S. is Destroying Young People's Futures, presented by Scott Galloway, professor at NYU. The video on YouTube was uploaded 12 days ago and it has almost 4 million views, over 18,000 comments. People across the internet are talking about this presentation, and Scott begs the question, do we really love our children? In this 18-minute long video, which we'll have linked below in the sub notes, Scott showcases data points comparing previous generations to today's 20 to 30-year-olds, the wealth disparities, the struggle to buy a house, and how the rise of social media has caused immense mental health problems. Each generation at the age of 25, pre-tax income adjusted for inflation, grandparents, 74,000, parents, 70,000, and kids, 56,000. And house priced income for grandparents, 3X, parents, 4X, kids, 7X. So basically he's getting into the fact that, you know, things are harder specifically financially than they were for previous generations when you adjust for inflation and things like that.
Yeah.
So thoughts on that?
I'm a pretty big fan of Scott Galloway. If you listen to some of the other things that he talks about in depth, I just listened to a podcast while I was mowing with that he was on, and he was on the Rational Reminder podcast with Ben Felix, and I really like what he said in that podcast. He was talking about how young people should make a difference in their lives, and what he was talking about was creating a skill set that you're the top 1%. Mm-hmm. And so he has good information, he has good topics to talk about, and he brings data into it, but he's not just a bearer of bad news. He brings solutions to it. So he's one of the people around the discussion of young people that I support, and I'm excited about the things that he's discussing if people will take the time to listen to him.
There's a lot of things that were kind of going through my mind. You know, we always talk about how we want to leave the world a better place. You know, we want our kids to have things easier than we have. I mean, it's a different world. I mean, from big global issues like, you know, the debt, you know, when does that get corrected? We keep kicking the can down the road, to inflation, to, you know, my first house in 95, I think, was $75,000. And, you know, interest rates were at 7%, you know, and at the time they were like, oh my gosh, these are the lowest rates you'll ever see. And now, you know, it's hard to afford a home. It's hard to buy a home for less than, you know, the mid 200s, 300s. And it's expensive. And I don't think necessarily wages have kept up with the cost of, you know, in certain parts of the country, home prices. And, you know, this is an inflation conversation, but it's pretty expensive out there, you know, for graduates coming out of college right now, finding a job. And then where do you live? I mean, it's a different world than when we were coming out.
I think there's a ton of truth to what he's saying. I also think there's some things we have to keep just in the right context. Like, you know, standard of living in terms of first time home, we've talked about this, first time home expectations has undoubtedly increased versus what it was 30 years ago, right? What people expect to buy, where they want to live, right? 30 years ago, you know, it was different in a sense of like, not everybody was trying to live in the hot up and coming, you know, growing areas necessarily. Like moving back home to your hometown, I think was more generally accepted and done. And today it's really tempting, and a lot of people want to move to the fun, hip communities and mm-hmm. areas and parts of the country that are growing, which are also the more expensive parts. Mm-hmm. And then when they get there, you know, they don't want to buy the, if there are even homes available in this price range, they don't want to buy the kind of old rundown house that might need some elbow grease mm-hmm. that they might have to live through for a period of time. Mm-hmm. They want to buy the HGTV kind of starter home, yeah. right? Mm-hmm. And so I think I see both sides of it, right? I don't think you can just point the fingers at previous generations saying like, hey, you know, you guys did this and have ruined it for us and it's all your fault, or it's all because of these few things. Some of it is because of natural change, you know, in economic situations and kind of the maturity of our economy and our nation and how expectations have changed.
One of the hard parts about doing a podcast like this is we'll take clips of this, and then it will be posted, and the comments that come through are all, well, you don't understand my right, living right. area. And so to say 20s and 30 year olds can't buy houses, well, that's correct in certain areas and demographics, mm-hmm. and then it's completely incorrect in other areas sure. of demographics. So broad brush strokes, yes, it's difficult for 20s and 30 year olds, but a lot of that comes into choice as to the places that you live, the careers that you pursue, the certifications that you have, and the education that's behind you. And so I don't mean to sound brass, but the difficulty of saying that 20s and 30 year olds are doomed to use really strong right. strong language like that, well, choices,
yeah,
inputs create outputs, sure. and if the choice is I want to live in a city that you don't have any form of certification or expertise to be in the top or upper income bracket, mm-hmm. yeah, it's going to be really hard. But if you take that same income and you go move to Tulsa, Oklahoma, it's going to be a completely different lifestyle and outcome.
And there's a lot of new opportunities today. I mean, 30 years ago, people didn't have the opportunity to make a good living working remote for a company completely mm-hmm. across the country. Right. And they do. You can do that mm-hmm. today. I think what you were saying, Eli, is it's not all bad, and to try to paint no. it as all bad, I think isn't fair. Is it hard? Yes. I mean, I think right now in the snapshots, particularly the last few years with interest rates having gone up and home prices having gone up, it's easy to look at this and say, hey, this is a really tough time for mm-hmm. young people, first time home buyers. And that's true. But that doesn't mean that's like going to always be the case, and it hasn't always been the case for the past mm-hmm. 10 years.
And right? there's a lot of lifestyle choices for 20s and 30-year-olds now that wasn't a lifestyle choice for right. 40 years ago.
Right.
Like the subscription services, the phone service.
Cell phones. I mean, 30 years ago, you didn't have a $200 cell phone bill.
Yeah, and it's not a need, right? It is a need.
I looked at you because you were the only one that was in your working years 30 years ago. Yeah. But you didn't, I mean, that wasn't part of your just like when you're doing your monthly budget, what do I need to pay the bills? And it wasn't $200 to Verizon,
Wi-Fi,
$100 to Netflix and Disney,
no.
and, you know,
no.
and like those things are now mm-hmm. viewed as an absolute necessity.
Yes.
Right. And so
homes are not even, for the most part, they're not even putting in phone lines
yeah.
anymore. I mean,
Wi-Fi, you didn't have Wi-Fi that yeah. you had to pay for. Yeah. You
yeah.
know,
you know,
much less internet.
You know, he, Scott made the comment in this video, and I thought I'd throw it out there. He says that it's never been easier to be a billionaire, but never harder to be a millionaire. It's never been easier to be a billionaire and never harder to be a
That's interesting.
Millionaire.
I really wouldn't think that he would say that.
I disagree with that.
I do too, but I just thought it was interesting that he would
Now, maybe never easier to be a billionaire. I see that, right? Because, one, you're still talking, as many billionaires as there are out there, you're still talking about a handful of people.
Right.
But with publicly traded markets today, technology, how companies can go public and all of that, it's I see that point. Mm-hmm. But the harder to become a millionaire, yeah.
I mean, to me, there's so many different ways to become a millionaire.
Yeah.
I don't agree with that last part
yeah.
of the statement.
Yeah. Well, and you have technology to get you there. It's easier to invest than it ever has been, and the dollar's worth less than it ever has.
Yeah. But it makes choices. The multimillionaires today either got there because they're just in the top 1% of 1% of earners, mm-hmm. right? And they set aside enough money and didn't just spend it all, or they aren't in the higher income of earners, but they made the life choices necessary to live well below their means mm-hmm. and save at a very high rate, 15, 20, 25% of their income for a long period of time. And I would like to say, like, if you still make those decisions today, you can be a millionaire.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
You can do that. And that's not drastically different than what it was mm-hmm. 10, 15, 20 years
ago. And possibly quicker because wages are so much higher.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you make the right choices.
Yeah. 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 Interesting.
Scott's worth over $100 million.
Yeah,
himself. So
yeah, yeah.
he made
go
it.
Watch. Go watch the video. Should be interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Things are tough. And on that note, I was looking up. This particular article was talking about Gen Z struggling financially more than millennials did at their age, and it was just getting into some of the same. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the same things. So, I think there's some validity to. We're just kind of living through a tough few years here with inflation and rates. But hang in there. I mean, you can still better your earnings and your education mm-hmm. and go out and make a good living. And yeah, you may not be able to have everything your friends have, but it's still possible.
Absolutely.
To get ahead.
Absolutely.
So, all right, that's all we had. But we want to get into some comments from last week. This is going to be fun. So we had comments from an Instagram post. We put out a reel from last week's episode, which was John discussing what minimum wage is for. So he was getting into like what minimum wage is and when, what it's kind of designed for. Sure. This is sensitive subject, as we've quickly learned. It can very easily get very political. Some of the comments, let me read some of these real quick.
But before you do, There's a post that I saw on Twitter today that I like to say.
Excuse me.
It's bizarre how comfortable folks are at being brutal to each other on social media. Professionals with serious reputations and careers using gaffes to publicly attack each other's character and competence in a manner that would be unthinkable anywhere other than the internet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. So, here's a few of the comments. So if minimum wage jobs, well, let me build some context around what John was saying. So John was saying, to summarize, not to put words in John's mouth, but John was basically saying like minimum wage is for your younger workers, people entering the workforce, students, people directly out of college that are trying to get their feet underneath them. It's not designed for, and it's never supposed to be where you stay for your entire career, right? If you show up,
that was
work,
not the intent.
That was not the intent. Yes. If you show up, do a good job. The idea would be that you would over time be promoted mm-hmm. to, you know, a manager's position or and
right.
even if you work at a McDonald's or fast food for your entire career, absolutely nothing wrong with that. I personally know people that work at McDonald's that do quite well.
Yeah.
That started at the cashier or at the front desk as an 18-year-old high school. I'm thinking of a few people in particular, and they've worked their way up and now are district managers and general managers. And so that's the kind of the structure. And so that was what John was getting into, and he got absolutely destroyed. So if minimum wage jobs, this is one of the comments. So if minimum wage jobs are only for students, why can I get a breakfast sandwich from McDonald's on a Tuesday morning? Shouldn't all their workers be in school?
Facts.
That's really funny. That's obviously not exactly how it works and not exactly what John was saying. But generally speaking, I think, again, minimum wage jobs are for those people. That doesn't mean those are the only people working those jobs. And some kids don't go to school on Tuesdays if you're in college. So,
true.
I mean, there's a combination of all of those things that I think make it possible for McDonald's to be open on Tuesdays. Minimum wage goes up. Minimum wage goes up. The rest is the wages go up. We've been programmed to believe raising minimum wage is a bad thing. It isn't.
The point was basically, as minimum wages go up, all other wages rise as well. And the point was, we've been led to believe that it's a bad thing if they go up. I mean, it's such a political firestorm whenever Congress wants to start raising the federal minimum wage. And so, I mean, but he's right, is that, you know, when you raise the minimum wage up to $15 an hour, well, a rising tide lifts all boats. And
yeah, yes.
I'm not saying it's a good or bad thing. I'm just
the problem with the idea of a minimum wage. I'm not saying I don't support it, but the problem with just limitless minimum wage, and we just like, you know, a lot of people, I'll say, they're saying it, hey, it needs to be like $20 an hour, you know, federal minimum wage across the board, and like a material increase is operating a business. Like, you have fixed costs and like things that expenses that you have to keep under control to operate a profitable business, right? And I can tell you, payroll is typically a company's largest expense, and for that to go up drastically, it may sound good on the surface and like, hey, everybody's benefiting, but you know, the business is going to have to find that from somewhere, right? It's either going to have to be increased revenue, they're going to have to fire people so they don't have as much pay. I mean, it's not as easy as just saying like, hey, let's increase that. And I think a perfect example is look at California and how many companies have left California because of how freaking expensive it is to run a business in California because of state income tax, higher minimum wages, all the regulations. So certain industries, it's really difficult to run a business in California because of all the regulatory requirements. And you've seen a ton of companies that are just like, we can't operate in this environment. So they go to Tennessee, Texas, Florida, where there's no state income tax, right? And so there's pros and cons. I mean, you can say, hey, let's increase it and set it at this level, but there's downsides to that.
Do you know what the federal minimum wage is right now?
$7.25. I only know that because Oklahoma is still $7.25.
What's California? Sorry,
$16.
$15. Yeah. You know what Arkansas is?
$11.
Yeah. Interesting.
All right. Another comment. Minimum wage is supposed to be able to support a nuclear family. Thoughts on that?
And the nuclear family would be mom, dad, two kids.
Two kids, I guess.
No, it's not.
Wait,
now, say the comment in again. Some cases, it might have to, but I don't think that was the design.
Sure.
Of it. I don't think so.
Supposed Eli? To be able to support a nuclear family. I don't know. I'd have to go into what is the hit, like why was minimum wage even created, and I haven't done any study around that.
Yeah.
I would like to say yes. I'd like to say yes, but I don't know why it was created or what it's necessarily there for. If we're saying that nuclear families are two children household or one child.
Well, let's get into some statistics. So this is from the U.S. Bureau of Labor. They published it in August of 2023, but it was for 2022, so it's 2022 data. So just bear with me here for a second. So, among those paid by the hour, 141,000 workers earned exactly the prevailing federal minimum wage. Okay. About 882,000 workers had wages below the federal minimum wage. Vast majority of those
service
were food, restaurant, and hospitality, right? Mm-hmm. So that, yeah, I mean, that's not surprising. Together, these 1 million workers with wages at or below the federal minimum wage made up just 1.3% of all hourly paid workers, which was little change from 2021. The average age, so minimum wage workers tend to be young, so that's supporting kind of just the point John was trying to make. Although workers under age 25 represented 1/5 of hourly paid workers, they made up about 45% of those paid the federal minimum wage or less. Mm-hmm. Among employed teenagers aged 16 to 19 paid by the hour, about 3% earned the minimum wage or less compared to just 1% of workers,
over that.
Mm-hmm. And then last thing, the industry with the highest percentage of workers earning hourly wage at or below the minimum wage, federal minimum wage, was leisure and hospitality. About 3 in 5 of all workers paid at or below were employed in these industries. So I think it goes to say that most of this, it becomes very political. Most of the people out there leaving the comments and stuff are not even federal minimum wage people, right? And the directly from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, most people make above federal minimum wage. I mean, it's a very small percentage of people, and the high percentage of those people that do are young people, 25 and younger. So,
we'll nickname John Lightning Rod.
Yeah. It's a, I mean, talking about minimum wage and some of the, if you want to get comments, that's a good topic to put out there.
I mean, it is a hot button. I mean, it's polarizing.
It's easy to say, and I'm in this camp as well, as we all are, we want people to make as much money as they possibly can make, right? But the job, the earnings have to be justified for the job that you're doing for in order for it to make sense for the business. And so for some outside, and this goes back to small government, big government, but for some outside entity in this situation, the federal government, to come in and say, no matter where you're working, no matter where you're operating a business, you have to pay your people X amount. Like, that needs to be on the lower end of where it needs to be federally if it's going to be a federal thing. If not, it needs to be at the state level, which a lot of states have gone on and left that. But the federal government does not need to come in and set this very high, you know, bar, because there are certain parts of the country. Sure. I mean, you go out to middle of nowhere, Oklahoma, at a gas station. You know, that gas station is going to close if they have to pay their people $20 an hour.
Oh, yeah.
Overnight. You know, I can't remember if I mentioned this on a recent podcast, but I know I talked about it with a client recently. Susan and I were out in California in January, and we had eaten nice restaurants, but we were like, you know what? We just want McDonald's. We went through the drive-thru at McDonald's, got two Diet Cokes and a large fry. The large fry was $6.50. And come to find out, California passed a law that all their fast food workers in the state of California, minimum wage is 20. And McDonald's and Wendy's and Burger King and all those, they've got to pass that. I mean, that is a very high fixed cost.
Sure.
And I do think we talked about it in last week's podcast with John, but because he made the comment that, you know, now McDonald's is experimenting with robots. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a McDonald's in Dallas area that is completely robot. So we got to be careful what we ask for, because
raise the minimum wage so high that now we can pay, we can purchase robots.
Yeah.
To do what we need.
Yeah. So, and it, yeah, interesting.
Yep. All right.
Should we give John's email address out?
Yeah. John's personal cell phone number.
That's right.
No, as always, we appreciate you joining and listening to the podcast. Leave us a comment. I'm like,
be careful what we ask for.
No, leave us a comment. We love the feedback, whether it's positive or negative. We just ignore the negative, but, we enjoy you. We appreciate you watching and listening to us. Give us a like and subscribe, and we will see you next week.
The hosts of this show are employees of Mach 1 Financial Group. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and nothing said in the show should be taken as investment advice. Mach 1 Financial Group, LLC, is an SEC registered investment advisor located in Rogers, Arkansas. Mach 1 may only transact business in those states in which it maintains a notice filing or qualifies for an exemption or exclusion from registration requirements. SEC registration does not constitute an endorsement of the firm by the commission, nor does it indicate that the advisor has attained a particular level of skill or ability. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. All investment strategies have the potential for profit or loss. The information presented is the sole opinion of the speaker and is not meant to be investment advice. Mach 1 does not provide tax or legal advice. You should speak to your tax or legal advisor regarding your specific situation. For full disclosures, click on the link in the episode description below.